We are rolling.
Okay. Today is Sunday, January 23rd, 2011, and while in New York you have sub-zero freezing weather, we in Jerusalem have once again a winter without any rain. So I don't know who's luckier and who has to pray harder. I want to thank David Pardo. You have no idea how much he helped me today. I'm still exhausted. You have no idea how much that we sat with the star list on my new book for over 2 hours this morning, going through all the final corrections, and that David caught a mistake that no one caught until now with typos. So he was offered a job already as a proofreader. That's number one. Number two, Adam Rosenberg, who's visiting here from KBY, told me a story about a chicken that fell off the window in Stern College. So I told him it reminded me of an unbelievable story that happened, and I share it with you very quickly in honor of Ephraim. You know that you read in my new book, of course, I tell the story of what we did in communist Russia under the auspices of a branch of the Mossad called the Nativ. You read the whole story, how the Nativ developed, and thank God I was able to tell the story. The security clause was lifted. Anyway, one of our biggest problems in Russia, Danny, was kosher food. So everyone had their own system, what they brought in, certain things you could get there, so bread, milk, whatever. We had it down to a science. So I sent two young men, one is my student, one is cousin, they both are in Chinuch, and they took along some beautiful Shmuel Bernstein salamis that you couldn't take Israelis' food, but you could take American food because you're an American, you're coming from America. And to keep it cold, they put it outside their windowsill on this big hotel in Leningrad. And lo and behold, the salami fell down, landed on the second floor, which was like a courtyard. And these poor guys went down to the hotel desk, this was all KGB people, and tried to explain to them that they lost the salami. Well, all I can say is the KGB had a good feast on that salami. Okay, now I just want to go a step further, and I want to make a correction with an interesting footnote. And again, I hope someone is listening who will do a doctorate under the summer rush, because the material is overwhelming. I want to thank Rabbi Yisrael Herzog, my Talmud, you recognize the name. He translates the Rashi for Artscroll, the whole Artscroll series. He was the head translator. So Rabbi Yisrael made a correction. I evidently said in the opening shiur on the summer Rosh, I said in passing that we've had to deal with forgeries in modern times. And I had an Erev of Pasha, and actually I know this, he's correcting me simply, I didn't have it written out in front of me, and I was talking quickly, and I mixed up two different chapters. One chapter was the Rajina Rebbe, and here I was correct, I mentioned the Rajina Rebbe, but he wasn't involved in a forgery. It's Reb Geshen Henoch, it's the Rebbe that you know. It's the Rebbe that you know with the Tchelet, the Rebbe who discovered the Tchelet. He was the third Rishina Rebbe. He, among his firm, he published a sefer on Seder Taharat, on I don't know if it was entire Taharat or part of Taharat, and he published two commentaries, a commentary like Rashi and a super commentary like Tosfat. And in the publication, it was in the format of a Gemara. And the Gedolei Yisrael were furious at him because they said people will think this is a real Gemara. When you have the Tahara, the Mishnah, and your Rashi commentary, and your Tosfos commentary, it looks like a regular Gemara. And that was the big machloket with the Rishina, that people were not happy with the format which he published it. Now, around the same time, during the same period, a Talmud, evidently a Volozhin named Reb Shmuel Friedlander, published Yerushalmi Kodshim. And that was the false publication. He came out with the Kodshim, and then when I started to read details about him, I see he emulated the Besamim Rosh, meaning he came up with a story that he's a Sfaradi. He called himself El Ghazi. He came up with a story that he doesn't speak Yiddish. He spoke Ivrit Bahavara Sfardit. He was a genius. And many people felt it, among them Gedolim, divided up whether it's legitimate, not legitimate. But one young man that he took into his confidence was Reb Yekutiel Greenwald, who later winds up the Rav of Columbus, Ohio. And he wrote a whole article about this forgery and how he was amazed that Shlomo Friedlander suddenly spoke Yiddish. So he asked him, how did you learn Yiddish? And he explained he went to Germany, he learned German, but that was the big machloket. There it mamish was a forgery, whereas the Sidrei Taharot was simply the format was attacked. So I want to correct myself because I mixed the Erev HaPashiyot, I put the Regina into the Kodshim. Zelechud v'zelechud. And I thank Rabbi Yisrael Herzlach for calling it to my attention, and you all know that I'm the happiest man alive when someone corrects me and I can be Maida al Ha'emet. Learn from the Rebbe, always be Maida al Ha'emet. Don't be like these scholars that if you correct them, they do a whole pilpul to justify the mistake. You follow me, Josh? I Maida al Ha'emet, but it's very fascinating. And someone who does a doctorate on the B'Samim Rosh, the relationship between him and the Forge Yerushalmi allows itself to be very, very fascinating. Okay, I want to move further. Yes, Nachman.
In the Mizinah, in the second edition, he put it on the bottom of the page. He said, written by...
Right. And they said, in the future editions, they made they amended it so that you knew you couldn't... It was not a real Gemara. But the Regina was an interesting individual of Geshen Hanechbaum. It's Ishbitz. Ishbitz Rajin. It's a dynasty that never had the numbers of gear or bells. On the other hand, nowadays it's very popular. Whatever the teachings are, I found that many of my students and the people have found soulless comfort, guidance in the Regin / Ishbitz. You've all heard of the Meshiloach and people quote it and Drashat. And it's evidently a world that those of you who incline to Hasidus, it's a world worth exploring. But I want to move further. And as we said last week, we spent time on the question of the man marrying his aunt, the nephew marrying the aunt, the whole question of was she married to the uncle? Wasn't she? Was she only a Pilegish? The Pilegish got us into the whole question of civil marriage. And once again, it's a question that has tremendous implications for modern times, because we deal with these problems day in and day out, civil marriage, reform marriage, conservative marriage, and you see that the B'Samim Rosh in his analysis was ahead of his times. Then we went a step further, and we got involved once again with the whole shaving problem. And if you recall, we discussed the shaving problem months ago in relation to someone that has sores on his face, and now comes up that this individual, the B'Samim Rosh, describes a man who took a haircut and shaved on Chol HaMoed. And they wanted to put him into Nidui. And the B'Samim Rosh gives, you know, you have no right to put him into Nidui, you have Rabbeinu Tam. And he takes this this attitude, you know, don't treat him so harshly. Fine. So Yitzchak Rubin asked me, once again shaving, what is going on here? Another tshuva with shaving. Once again we're being bothered by the question of shaving. And Yitzchak, we just mentioned Yitzchak Rubin's name, and Yitzchak Rubin asked me this question after class. And I told Yitzchak that the B'Samim Rosh threw him a curveball and struck him out. He didn't even realize what's happening here. And here I want to go a step further, and here you have one of the few times Matan in the army, the Mafakeh, this gentleman is going into the army, what is it, 1 week from today? Okay, so Mr. Fried, we can be proud. 1 week from today, going in, his parents are Israelis, but he's an American kid, but he wants to have it behind him on his CV, Yotzei Tzava. So in the army, your commander's going to ask you, you know, he's going to bark at you, what are you thinking, what are you doing? you're not always going to tell him the truth. This is one of the few times in the Besom Rosh where Reb Shaul Berlin lets his hair down and tells the truth. Now look, watch what he did. Herbie, look what he did. He set you up for the slaughter. Meaning, tell me, does anyone here take a haircut on Chol HaMoed? Adam, would you dare to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed? What are you, a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, handy, filthy, depraved, degenerate, the bounce, repetitious, Karen Biyakna student? Chas v'chalila. Tell me, do you shave Chol HaMoed?
Absolutely.
Okay, we shave Chol HaMoed, a haircut we don't take. So you see, what the Besom Rosh set up here was a straw man. He did two things wrong. He took a haircut and he shaved. In the Kasa Dahasana, in his super commentary on the so-called Shuvat of the Rosh Menachem, he opens up his mouth. And here, look what he says. Chas v'chalila, a person shaves, he shouldn't shave. We don't shave every day, we don't shave every week. It's not like a haircut. So you see, when it comes to the haircut, he joins with the forces in assuring him. But when it comes to the shave, he now lets his hair down and he sings a song of praise that in the modern world we have to shave quite often. And that's why you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. And he calls the Machlokes Rishonim, is there an Issur Melacha in shaving? And most Rishonim learn no.
Well,
because the
Hold on one second.
And most Rishonim learn, the Mishnah says openly, Shelo Yikanes Liyantav Menuval. Underline the words Menuval. So it has to do if you shave only once a month, once in 2 weeks. You're going to leave it for Chol HaMoed, that's wrong. But we who shave every day, and now he describes what's happening. We know that. The Moshe says, the Tzvi Pesach Frank says, they're long tshuvot. But this is, you are talking in the year 1950. We're now in 1780. And this is an individual who wants to come out of the ghetto and wants to be modern. And everyone is mocking him. He is caught in a trap of vice. There's no outlet yet. It's like a Beis Yaakov girl in Mea Shearim who wants to go to Stern College. You understand? It's a terrible, you got to feel for him. But let me quote what he says here. And he says, this concept of shaving, he says, we never heard anyone talk about shaving. In days of yore, no one shaved. Even the Gentiles, Gadlus Kanim, grew their beards. But he says, Hanyan Hazech Itkal Lihishtarev Ben Ehudim. He says, in Italy, and this is true, the Renaissance, rumor has it that the Mesillah Yeshayahu was clean shaven. Right or wrong, we've seen pictures of him. Again, I don't know, it's pictures, it's not, it's paintings, it's portraits, it's not a picture. Today a picture doesn't count at all for evidence. You know why? Because you can doctor up a picture. You're sitting there with a beard, and I can take a picture of you and send it to your parents and say your son no longer has a beard. Well, I have a picture of the rub that my neighbor played with, where they take the rub's hand out of the picture, totally remove the hand, give it a different stunts altogether. So today, pictures don't count, paintings don't count, but he says it began in Italy, then it came to Germany about 70 years ago. So he's talking about 1710, 1720, and the important people started to shave. And shaving became a sign of sophistication. And he says the Jews living there had to live among the Gentiles. Listen to these words. This is Yitzchak Rubin speaking. Shelo yitma'asu. That they shouldn't look unclean, unshaven, primitive among the Gentiles. And some rabbis began to paskin like the Rabbeinu Tam. This is a Rabbeinu Tam that's very elusive. We don't know whether this Rabbeinu Tam exists or not. That you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed if you shave Erev Yontif. But as far as taking a haircut, absolutely not. The man is a shagetz, he did wrong, but nevertheless, to put him into nidui, that he would not agree with. So it's a fascinating tshuva, because those words about how shaving began and how shaving becomes a sign of sophistication of the Western world, this is Rav Shaul Berlin speaking clearly and loudly. And of course, the echo is what I told you with the Rav, when we asked the Rav, when Yitzchak Zimmer, when Eric Zimmer asked Rebbe, can I shave Chol HaMoed? The Rav's reaction was exactly like Rav Shaul Berlin. What are you, mourning? Do you shave every day? Shave every day? Absolutely. Okay, that's the end of shaving. It's a critical tshuva. And he drew up that straw man, taking a haircut and taking a shave, the difference between them. And in our world until today, at least in my world, we don't take haircuts Chol HaMoed, but we do shave Chol HaMoed. On the other hand, I have to admit that I have many grandchildren who don't shave Chol HaMoed, because they're in Israel and they're crowds. No one shaves Chol HaMoed, so they're part of that crowd. And their grandfather stands by and understands it. Yes, Yitzchak.
Since we're just discussing shaving, what was the Rav's opinion about shaving Sfira? Because I understand that he permitted shaving.
Listen, if you ask David Holzer, the Rav asked for him shaving Sfira. The Rav held that Sfira is a din in Yud Beit Chodesh, not a din in Shleshim. So once it's a din in Yud Beit Chodesh, and you have to go among the Gentiles, he shaved. You know that the Rav shaved him Sfira. Why? We don't even want to tell us. We sat in his class. At that time, the Rav had a Van Dyke. And he shaved during Sfira. But of course, he traveled back and forth. Did we shave during Sfira? Absolutely. Do they shave during Sfira today in YU? I don't know. You can tell me. I imagine yesh v'yesh. Does Rakepet shave during Sfira? He made his peace with living in Israel. He shaves on Friday. You understand? So Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik Paskin, you can shave Friday. Rabbi Lichtenstein Paskin. So I make a compromise. Do I suffer not shaving? Absolutely, because I grew up in the Western world. I've been corrupted. If I'm not clean shaven, I feel like a slob. I don't like to feel like a slob, but I'm smart enough to know that many of you can have beards and payas, and your Rebbe is not jealous of you, but he is proud of you. We'll put it that way. Okay. The 3 weeks the Rav held, I once got told off when I came in Aliyah, an Elter, a Litvisha Rav, wiped the floor with me and said, "Yes, sir, I don't want to repeat his words, but it's like that's a Talmud Chacham, and how come you're shaving the..." I told Lichtuvi the Rebbe, the Rav didn't shave the 9 days. The Rav held that the 3 weeks has a din of Yud Beit Chodesh, the 9 days has a din of Shloshim, and Tisha B'Av itself has a din of Avelot. So during the 9 days, the Rav didn't shave. So I don't shave during the 9 days. What can I tell you? I'm not any different than the Sfadim, who can get away with not shaving until Shavuot, Shechal Bo, Tisha B'Av. And if Tisha B'Av is on a Sunday, they don't have any day they can't shave except Sunday. If Tisha B'Av is a Nidchet of Sunday, then they have a Machlokes Achronim, okay? But outside of that, they don't have a problem. But okay. Tisha B'Av, what can I tell you? You know, the Rav in my book, I quote the Rav describing Professor Mittwoch, how the Rav stood in awe of his digduk in mitzvahs, that he was so punctilious, and describes Professor Egon Mittwoch. I taught his great niece in Mechla, and I played the tape for her of the Rav describing her uncle, what was the story? How he came to the University of Berlin. He was the dean of the Graduate School of Oriental Studies, and he came to Tisha B'Av with a 9-day beard and with shtekshich, with house shoes, you know, without wearing leather shoes. And the Rav couldn't believe the man's Dikduk in mitzvah. But that's his commentary on German Orthodoxy. But on the other hand, he felt they didn't have the Torah of the Litvishe Welt. You understand? I have it there in detail. Okay, but I want to move into a different area, and I want to show you how this was just quoted in contemporary rabbinic literature. They just got involved with this question, and they quote the B'Sam and Rosh, and they criticized for quoting the B'Sam and Rosh. But first of all, let's take the question. It's B'Sam and Rosh 94. And again, how we came up with these interesting questions. All right, let me first, again, I may be reading into the B'Sam and Rosh, I may be reading too much into it, but I want to read into it. I want to read into it very simply. Most mitzvot we do, when you look at it, you know, from afar, someone who doesn't know about Torah, it's very nice what we do. What's wrong with eating matzah? What's wrong with taking a lulav and etrog? A lulav and etrog, matzah, you can explain to any Gentile. They'll be impressed with the explanation. What's wrong with reading Megillat Esther? What's wrong with making Kiddush on Shabbat, sanctified? These are all beautiful mitzvah, and Shabbat, I mean, to make Kiddush on wine, I don't have to tell you, many an Italian would line up online to join you for Kiddush on wine, particularly nowadays when you have the finest wines in the world that are kosher. All right, I don't have to tell you that. But there's among the mitzvah we do that at times can be disquieting. You have a mitzvah of Marah. People eat bitters. No, have you ever tried to eat horseradish? Pure horseradish. Some people, I remember these degraded right before Yontif. All right, even graded. It's not exactly the greatest, happiest, easiest mitzvah in the world to do. I remember one year when I was younger, I was a wise guy. I wanted to eat, besides the romaine lettuce, a little good grated horseradish. I got so sick, my stomach. Believe me, I don't try that again. Let the horseradish remain on the plate, but not in my mouth.
There's no question that the horseradish is more
in the first place. Say the Minhag Yisrael is that it is horseradish. So we have substitutes, right? We have romaine lettuce. We have other types of greens that may substitute. I need not tell you that romaine lettuce is a very easy way to be yotzei the mitzvah.
Yeah.
But he comes up here that this man contacts him, that his wife can't eat the horseradish. If she'll eat a kazayat, she will be sick, she will be in bed, and the substitutes, I don't know exactly what chazeres and olshin, what he means by it, but the endives, whatever the substitutes are for horseradish, but we use romaine lettuce, is not available in his city. Now, you have to understand, in Israel, Baruch Hashem, we have wonderful farmland and a good climate. So we have a world of different types of fruits and vegetables available here. In the United States, there are many areas where they don't have good climate for farming. But nowadays, no one suffers because they import right away with the planes today and the frigidaires and the freezers, so you get the best of honey from all over. As a matter of fact, in America today, there are basically no seasons, because even during the winter, you can get what we used to call summer fruits. They're imported from South America, Mexico, I'm told. I know that Gush Katif produce is imported in America before Pesach. I saw it with my own eyes. That Gush Katif that we pay 3 for 10 shekel in the Shuk Machne Yehuda, you're paying $4 or $5 for one head of lettuce in America, but you're getting Gush Katif. Here he's describing a situation where she can't get the substitutes, and all she can eat is the real Mara. V'tafog chagecha litsa. And if she's going to eat this, the whole holiday turns into pain. And I don't have to tell you, if you've seen with your own eyes, I know I'm very makpid only to have grape juice at the Seder. So people, of course, I'll be in a hotel this Pesach, so I certainly will have grape juice. So people would ask me, how come, you know, the Rambam Shita, red wine, Tosafos, Grape juice is a whole machlaikit. Is it wine? Isn't it wine? All right, I'm well aware of the lamdis. I'm well aware of the machlaikis. But I'll tell you one thing. Many decades ago in my home, we had a guest, the Leo Haseda, a relative of Rabbi Revel, an elegant lady, a relative of Rabbi Revel. And we drank wine, the first kosh. She got so drunk, it was frightening to see an elegant, sophisticated lady drunk. From that Seder on, the only drink that enters my house for Leil HaSeder is grape juice, preferably red grape juice. The Rambam, the red, all right, fine. Here, he's asking about the Mara. It's an ingenious question. Now, he turns to the Besamim Rosh and asks him, give me an Eitzah. Give me a solution. Now, the Besamim Rosh gets involved here very fascinatingly, something that I've quoted before in many different contexts. Tell me, the concept of Derechecha Darchei Noam, that the Torah has to be pleasant, does that affect the Halacha? That the Torah has to be pleasant. What does that mean? One of the Rishonim, the Radbaz, it's discussed in the context, if you're obligated to give up a limb to save a person's life. And for the sake of argument, a despot will say, I'll chop your hand off. If you don't let me chop your hand off, I'm going to kill that other Jew. You have to give up your limb. And this is great Rishonim bringing the concept that the Torah can't require you to give up your hand to mutilate yourself. And this...
Rambam said yes or no?
No, he said no. That you can't...
Those days, if you give up your limb...
They say that. But can you force someone to give up a kidney in modern times? Okay? It would be a very interesting question.
But it would be a
bit of chesed. A chesed it would be with a kidney. But can you force someone? It may very well be you can say that Acher Dachinom. By the way, there have been cases like this where people have gone to court to force a sibling to give up a kidney, and I don't believe they ever won a case in court. But this is a very fascinating question. So he goes into the whole question, if you don't feel well, the Torah cannot require you to do a mitzvah that will make you sick. And he applies here the concept that Acherecha Darchei Noham, Torah L'chaim Nitna, the Torah was given for life, the Ein Ze Darchei Noham. We would say the Ein Zu Darchei Noham. That this is not Darchei Noham, the force of person to be sick, to throw up, to feel uncomfortable, to suffer on the Chag. Let me develop it, and then we'll throw it open. And the HaTorah L'chaim Nitna. Torah is given for life. These are important modern concepts. The old Dahainami Mitzvah Gedola Avrit Gufo Michol Choli. And a person has to keep himself healthy. Now, what about sakana? What is the sakana? What can happen to you? And don't we have, and he quotes the Gemara, describes a certain Amora that he forced himself to drink 4 cups of wine, and he was sick until Shavuot. So if a person forces himself to drink 4 cups of wine, maybe you have to force yourself to eat tomorrow, and you'll be sick, Nothing we can do about it. He quotes, I believe it's Yerushalmi. Let me see if he gives a source. I know. No. This is a real Gemara. Let me see if he quotes it. If not, I'll show you a different. I'll come to it. I'll give you a source where you'll be able to find it very easily. No, he doesn't give a source, but it's an absolute. It's about Rabbi Yochanan, and it's an absolute Gemara. I remember learning the Gemara, and he held his, remember the Gemara says, if I'm not mistaken, he held his loins, forced himself to drink the four cups, and he suffered until in an admirable way. Now, so he gets involved here in a whole analysis. What a sakana. Ein hachinami, a person has to suffer, particularly if it's a mitzvah d'oraita. But he says, when it comes to mara, what are we dealing with here? And if you want a whole analysis of mara, I refer you to a wonderful sefer, Hamoadim Bahalacha, by Reb Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Remember I told you when the sefer came out, you don't know, it came out in the mid-50s, if my memory is correct, around 1958. You cannot imagine the impact it had. He had it. Are you familiar with the sefer? Hamodim Bahalacha. I remember we asked the Rav to come and daven it. And you know, the Rav said he took all the chakiras, but the Rav wasn't that impressed. But we students were overwhelmed. Now, and by the way, this is the original edition, the Hebrew edition, the English edition, Artscroll, who put it out, they did something terrible, terrible, terrible. It's beyond words. It's spiritual assassination. That's what I call it. They changed certain things there because the Rav Shlomo Yosef, who I knew personally, who is a great Chabadnik and a great religious Zionist and an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, they put in that it would Halil and Yom HaTzmud. I don't want to repeat it. How can you do something like that? If you are intellectually dishonest, you have the seeds within you to do every sin in the Torah because you'll find the justification for it. And I don't have to go further. We have enough examples of what goes on in the Torah world.
Book, which I have at home,
right,
in which he says he has to do tshuva, because in the Hebrew edition, he left out saying
you're the Halil. No, that's not Reb Shlomo. We're confusing it with Ishu Veito.
You're right.
You're talking about with Rav Kitov. You're mixing up. I knew Rav Kitov.
Eliyahu
Kitov. But Reb Shlomo Yosef Zevin was a tremendous Zionist, religious Zionist, Mizrachiite, a Chabadnik, a Sefer Todah. You're confused. More the Sefer Todah is a popular Sefer. Taka, he left it out and did Shuvah afterwards. He left it out because of the pressure from the right wing. But you know, an Adam Gadol is not allowed to be pressured. You have to say the truth. And the right wing cannot be too proud recently. You understand the scandals where you have Dudi Zubishlag. I know him. What corrupted him? His B'nai Akiva days or his days in the Haredi world? Draw your own conclusions. Right now in Muncie, what's going on with Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim's name should be involved in this. It breaks the heart. I come from a world of purity. I saw Gedolei Yisrael. To rewrite Rav Zevin, it's not Gedolei Yisrael. That's Shiflut HaTorah, not Gavlut HaTorah. Okay, anyway. So I want to tell you, it's a wonderful sefer. You go to page Shin Chaf Aleph, there he gives a whole discussion of Mara, and you'll see very clearly that Mara Bizman Hazeh, it's a whole machlokes in the Gemara, but La Halacha, Mara Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanon. So once Mara Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanon, you don't have to bring yourself Lidei Sakana. Even if it's not a real sakana, it's only indisposition, if I may use that word. Even if it's only chveis, a little bit stomach trouble, it's not chas v'chalila or anything that's life-threatening, but for a din de rabbanan, you don't have to bring yourselves the day sakana. What's the question you have to ask on this viewpoint? The Abba Kaisis is also a din de rabbanan. That certainly is a din de rabbanan. Mara is a dindi oraita, main makar. But what does the Gemara say? It's only a dindi oraita when you have a kopin kaisar. But when you talk about dalit kaisar, no one in the world can say that that's a dindi oraita. So he says that was midat chasidah. That's not for all Jews. That is for Rabbi Yochanan. Hold on, I'll finish and I'll open it for questions in a minute. Now, I want to tell you, when you talk about Midot Chassidut, each topic is so fascinating. What do you mean by Midot Chassidut? So I want to tell you, Rabbi Revel published on this topic, among others. There's a world, who is obligated to Midot Chassidut? How does it obligate you? Who has the right to call himself a chassid? Does Ben Ehrenkrantz have a right to drink Dalet Kolsat, get sick, knowing he's going to get sick, and Ben will tell you, I'm a chassid, I'm like Rabbi Yochanan. But I think, on a simple level, we all understand that we are not obligated to emulate Rabbi Yochanan. He got himself sick, he suffered, he is Rabbi Yochanan. We are simple Jews, and we are exempt from Dalet Kolsat if it will get us sick. Nowadays we have solutions. You've seen the Achronin, tshuva after tshuva. If you can't drink wine, you drink grape juice. B'diyevet, if you don't have grape juice, maybe Chamor Medina, something else. We'll find our way to be mekil for someone who really can't have any intoxicating liquor. But to emulate Rabbi Yochanan, I don't think anyone has a right to say. If you do what you have to do, it's still a hate quietly, not let the world know that you suffer.
What happens
but,
on Halacha Lamaisa when someone is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, if God forbid he would drink any liquor, it could turn him back to...
Okay, we'll find a head of him. He has to have 4 cups of Chamor Medina, something... the Achronim already discussed it. If they allow grape juice, there's no problem whatsoever. But if they don't allow grape juice, so some other juice that is special, that it's has chashiva. But Bizman Hazeh, I would tell you, it has to be pomegranate juice. That's what they say is the healthiest. But there are already achronim who discuss this. But if grape juice is allowed, it solves all problems. But you see, he's ingenious here. Because the man, look what he's doing. He's putting a pleasant face on halacha. He's taking Mara and he's asking a question, and this poor woman, and she's suffering, and my wife, and she'll be sick, and dachar dachin noham. This becomes, I would say, the cornerstone of the Jew leaving the ghetto. What is all the apologetics about? No? How many people have discussed Rav Shimshua Fril Hirsch, have discussed the Rav, anyone who meets modernity head on? Don't you hear the word apologetics? What are they explaining? What about the Mora Nevuchim? How do you describe the Mora Nevuchim? No, Mendel? You understand?
They burned it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about those who understood what the Mora Nevuchim was doing, and I'll give you one rule of the thumb that I have found to be almost totally correct. When Gedolei Yisrael write in Lashon Hakodesh, it's not apologetics. When they write in the vernacular, be it Arabic or be it French or English or German, there is a measure of apologetics. And this is what I have found. And you only get involved in apologetics when you come out of the ghetto. What about Philo? The whole machloket and Philo, is he legitimate? Isn't he legitimate? Is he within the Masorah? Isn't he within the Masorah? Tremendous machloket that goes on until today. Didn't Rabbi Belkin, had Rabbi Belkin not become president of Yeshiva University, you would have had unbelievable scholarship and Philo viewed from the shtans of halacha. But because he became president, it cut down drastically on the time he could devote the scholarship. But the little we have from Dr. Belkin, including what came out posthumously, you have a great deal. And again, it's a good deal of apologetics. Now, I'm not being critical. The word apologetics, I'm not saying that in a critical fashion. I'm saying it in a descriptive fashion. And here you have an unbelievable shaila, which lo hayav lo nivra, who couldn't come up with some vegetable for Mora, but uses it as a chance to talk about the Rachel Dachinohim, to polish the image of Torah as we come out of the ghetto. What's equally fascinating is when you continue with the tshuva, you see their parentheses. And I don't have to tell you how much I suffered this morning with the copyist, whether it should be parentheses or brackets. David will testify. Okay. Here you see parentheses. And again, he makes it so real that on this tshuva, it was much longer. But the copyist, Yitzchak Di Modina, writes that a good deal of the tshuva was lost, was never copied. So why he does that, I don't know, but it adds a flavor. In other words, when you tell a fib, when you tell a lie, the more details you can put in, the more accurate it looks. So here, he has a whole discourse in the parentheses. Tshuva zu matzati katuv beveikin osav shal harav hakadol malat kvoldo Yitzchak ben Leiv. And when I stayed with him, and this is Yitzchak Di Modina talking, v'hira chavava ruka ki nifla, and he says it was a fabulous tshuva, very long, with tremendous riot and gemaras, and nevertheless, it was not copied. The one who copied it wrote the Kitzer HaMachatik HaKrach HaZeh Kederech She'asu B'chol HaTshuvot L'Rishonim. And he quotes the Maram, he says, what they did to the Maram Rottenberg, what they did to the Rashba, they simply cut the Tshuvot down to size. Why? Tshuvot were expensive. It's before typesetting. Everything is copied by hand. The less you have to copy, the less you have to pay. So you see, the economics had influence on the Kitvei Yad. This is why today we have so many Svarim. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry puts out a Sefer. Every institution. Why? Print is cheap today. Computerization revolutionized the world of publication. Just think for a minute what I'm saying. My first book, the copyist asked me, she views me evidently as a very old man. She thought I teach here in Torah Shraga. She asked me, how do you relate to students 18 and 19? Danny, she was asking the wrong person. I'm younger than you and I'm younger than them. Believe me, they don't know them. I can tell you, I just learned that the Meitzer Te'iloi came to America in 1922. Yitzchak, you're listening? The Meitzer Te'iloi of Shlomo Palachek. I heard this from a grandson of Talmidim of his, that his grandfather and great uncle used to tell him, they learned with the Meitzer Te'iloi, that the boys try to get him interested in baseball. They brought him the batting averages of the Yankees. David, you'll explain to Frank later what I'm talking about, or he's Americanized already. They brought him the batting Yankees of the Yankees, Ruth and Garrick and Earl Coombs and Bill Dickey and Gedolei Meshev Haaretz. And the Meitzer didn't understand baseball, but he knew every batting average every day. You understand? That was the Meitzer. So if I can tell that, and I told the person who emailed me, I said, listen to my chesper on Joe DiMaggio. I begin with the Meitzer and end with the Meitzer. Believe me, I'm young enough to teach you fellas and even Torah Shraga b'di'evet. Okay. Anyway, but it's a fabulous tshuva. And you see what he's... Now, I may be reading too much into it. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to show you the machlokes in a second. But what did you want to ask? Mendel, you wanted to ask something?
Yeah, answered it.
Ephraim, you wanted to ask? Who else wanted to ask?
Anyone? I wanted to ask when there's a sakana, even a isodoret is being pushed
off. Yeah, but then you need a real sakana. Now, that's the point he makes that way. You know, this is a sakana, say you'll have a stomach ache. As far as I know, no one dies from a stomach ache. But if the stomach ache represents something very serious, and that's what it's going to cause, then it's a different story. But here it's a dindarabbanan, but nevertheless, the Dalit Kosav remains a real problem. So I want to show you...
Is it really... Is any reason to argue this
tshuva? No, the tshuva seems to make a lot of sense. But I think the thrust of the tshuva was daracher darchinom. It gave him a chance to show we're coming out of the ghetto, how you speak of mitzvot, daracher darchinom, and drinking dalet kosher and hurting your thighs and getting sick. That's midat chassidah. Do you understand? We have to live like normal people outside of the ghetto. Look, I'll quote Rakefet to you. Look what's going on with the swing, what they call the swing to the right. I'm going to talk about the swing to the right, if not tomorrow, next week in class, but Beseda. But just think for 1 minute. First they started, you can't drink water. Remember that? Brooklyn. Then you have all the vegetables, and they not only hit the fruits, they hit the strawberries. Now, Gedolei Yisrael, I saw it in my own eyes, Gedolei Yisrael eating strawberries. Rav Yoshev eats strawberries. All we did, we cut off the green part and you wash it. Then, I don't have to tell you, broccoli, corn, these are the healthiest vegetables. Then a few months ago began the whole story with the fish, with salmon, with tuna. Now you just think for a minute, an outsider looking in, gee, these Jews, I mean, an Arab will be the happiest Arab, every anti-Semite will dance for joys. Don't let them eat vegetables, don't let them eat fruit, don't let them drink water, don't let them eat fish, let them eat meat. They'll all drop dead. You know how bad meat is for you, right or wrong. Anyone with seichel stops eating meat. Believe me, the older I grow, if I have a choice, I order sim, not steak. You understand? It's a sign of wisdom and of age. So this is what the Racher Dachin Noam means. That it's Yiddishkeit has to look. We're normal. We're not crazy. We're not off the wall. We're not the self-flagellation. How would you say that in simplest things, simpler English? Torturing ourselves. What's the word you used?
Beating
ourselves. You understand? You ever see these religions? They beat themselves. Where is it? In India, they march and their blood is flowing.
Iran.
Oh my God. You're sickening. Now, let me show you something amazing. You think this is an ancient history? I'm now quoting from Hamayan Tevet Tash Ach, if I'm pronouncing it right. Tavshin Ayin Aleph. I'm quoting from the last issue of Mayan, a month ago. Anyone tell me what Mayan is? Who knows? Mayan, which journal is it? You have to know, understand the journal. Mayan has a very rich history. It was founded by Polei Agudat Yisrael. Mayan represents the Yekids who came to Israel, who were a cross between Haredim and Tzioniyim Datiyim. I knew the legendary editor, Yonah Emanuel, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha. They don't make Jews like Rabbi Yonah Emanuel anymore. One of a kind. He was an optometrist in the center of Jerusalem, a London Mufak, from Holland, how they survived the Holocaust. They don't make Jews like that anymore. The problem with Polei Agudah was it disappeared. Why did it disappear? Because the children either went Agudah or Chadalim, either Haredim or Chadalim. Polei Agudah couldn't retain its ground. You went either way. The majority, of course, went Tzionim Datiyim, and a good deal of the Yeshiva Tichoniyot and a good deal of the Yeshiva Chesda are in the hands of children and grandchildren of Polei Agudah people. It's a shifting sand that doesn't exist today. So Mayan, after Rabbi Yonah Emanuel's demise, was taken over by Yeshivat Shalavim. And it's a very important rabbinic journal. It's a combination of Labriot, a combination of classic scholarship and at the same time scientific Jewish scholarship. It's a very balanced rabbinic journal. So in the latest issue of Mayan, it has a review of a recent issue of Kovetz Beit Aharon v'Yisrael. What is Kovetz Beit Aharon v'Yisrael? It's Colin Stollen. They put out, it's a rabbinic journal, also on a very high level, dealing with contemporary problems, and they put out a rabbinic journal, and in the section of Mayan, where they review the greatest books, they quote this journal and they analyze it. Now, in the analysis, on page 114, it seems in the rabbinic journal of Colin Stullen, the author dealing with the question of rabbinic law, how much you have to sacrifice, and they quote of a Summon Rosh that Dalit Tosaf, only Rabbi Yochanan, Midat Hasidat, but the average Jew does not have to sacrifice to be Yotzei rabbinic law. And they quote of a Summon Rosh that he differs with the Rashbam. In other words, what does the Rashbam say? Sheha'ani tzarich limkor ksuto kidei lishtot arba kolsot b'leil haseda. And they quote the B'Summon Rosh as saying, and it's in the B'Summon Rosh, hein guzma, that this concept you have to sell your clothes, what the Gemara talks about in the Dalet Kolsot, and it's so important, and it's a guzma. You understand guzma. All of you have learned Masechet Talmud, no? So the Gemara talks about 300 kohanim were needed to move the parochat, and how much gold there was in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says it's a guzma, and the Gemara goes on to say that in the Chumash you find the guzma, in Tanakh you find guzmaot, and in the Mishnayot you find guzmaot. So the B'Summon Rosh dismissed the Rashbam as a guzma. And he quotes the B'Summon Rosh in all seriousness. And the Mayan says, how do you quote the B'Summon Rosh without giving information that whatever he says is questionable? How can you quote him as being totally within the tradition and totally accepted? If you quote him, you have to say some accept him and he has the detractors, and we have to look into the matter and analyze it further. But you can't take the B'Summon Rosh as an ultimate, absolute, and final authority. So I found that very, very fascinating, that a question that just came up now goes back to the B'Summon Rosh that we quoted a minute ago. Okay. This is nothing. Gentlemen, we have arrived. We have arrived. And it's just amazing what B'Summon Rosh pulls off here. Adam, you come from Portland, Oregon. You live among Gentiles. You're living in Portland, Oregon many generations. Three. That's many generations. Your father makes a living in Portland, Oregon. You do not lack for anything. You are American citizens. And you celebrate Tisha B'Av there? You fast? What are you lacking? What are you so upset about? What's missing in your life? Gentlemen, one of the greatest problems that hit the Jew when he came out of the ghetto, a problem that reverberates until today, dual loyalties. What did Napoleon say to the Jews, the famous Sanhedrin? Are you Jews who happen to live in France, or are you French citizens who happen to be of the Jewish persuasion? Nope, the reformers. What were the first concepts they got rid of? Sacrifice. Temple. Restoration to Zion. Germany is our Palestine, and Berlin is our Jerusalem. Quote, end quote. And that's long before they got rid of Kashrut, long before they got rid of Shabbat. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Gentlemen, this is a student of the Rebbe's long before you were born, and his wonderful wife. Welcome. Long before you were born. Not only Adam, a student of the Rebbe, his father was my mother-in-law's student. So we go back 80 years. But let's come back to Portland, Oregon. How do you celebrate Tisha B'Av? You understand? This was one of the challenges that the Jews faced when they came out of the ghetto. Dual loyalty. You've heard it time and again. Every anti-Semite will bring it up. Anyone who's out to burn the state of Israel, anyone who's out to create problems, Jonathan Pollard, Kaspar Weinberger, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro, right or wrong, this dual loyalty. Now, you know what's amazing? Reb Sherbel, and this is maybe the most famous forged tshuva in the B'Samen Rosh, right here, he desecrates Tisha B'Av. And the way he does it, the genius of the man, once again, he begins with an innocent shayla, an innocent question. It's nothing to do with Tisha B'Av. And then he rolls into Tisha B'Av. And I'm quoting now the B'Samen Rosh, Kuf Ayin Dalet. And here you have a question that we all face. Chupat Nida. What is Chupat Nida? When a man marries a woman, the wife, the woman, has to be in a state of purity that the marriage can be consecrated. If you look at it that way, then there's never a problem. What about if you have Chupat Nida? By definition, the marriage cannot be consecrated. You cannot finish the marriage. Is the Chupah Chal? Does it take place? So it's a Machlokes Rishonim. La Halacha, we always paskin, particularly in modern times when people arrange a wedding in advance and so much money is spent, and a caterer, and a hall, and a band, and a photographer, and flowers, and kippot, and kveis kumashim sidurim. I don't have to tell you what is spent on a wedding. So first of all, we hope it'll last. According to statistics nowadays, it's a very bad investment. Invest in a bar mitzvah, invest in a bat mitzvah, because no one can undo that. Or invest in a brit milah, or a pigeon haben. But to invest in a wedding is very foolish. I would advocate weddings being in the rabbi's study, chap lap, finished. If they're together 50 years later, then you can make a proper party. Quote Rakefet on it, one of his witticisms. Don't take the two Adim and a rabbi. Okay, if you want to be machmir, have a minion. Let it be with a minion. Okay, but so la halacha lemaisa, we do a chupat nida today. We use some of the Rishonim that feel that it doesn't have to be ruyah labia at that moment. It means in the future. And we do a chupat nida. The problem, of course, is afterwards, they have to be separate. The chatan v'kala can't sleep in the same room together. So if you do it very quietly, the mother of the bride knows, and you don't make it public because there's sheva brachas, etc., etc., there are ways to do it in good taste, but sneer, and allow the wedding to go through. And this is the question that they asked of the B'Samen Rosh, that there was a problem with a woman who was Pareset Nida, and they went through with the wedding, and did they do the right thing doing the wedding? And the B'Samen Rosh writes very beautifully, if this is the Rosh speaking, and he says, why are you asking me? You already asked the great rabbi, and whatever you did, I will agree with. But he says, if you really want to know the truth, if it's possible not to do a chupat nida, you shouldn't do it. And he's talking about, and the reasons he gives, nothing to do with what I said a moment ago, There was no great arrangements in advance. There was no loss of food. There was no photographer. As a matter of fact, most weddings historically took place Friday afternoon. The reason the weddings took place Friday, again, I'll go into this in great detail if God should give me strength in a few years' time when I'm going to spend a year devoted to understanding the wedding ceremony of today. But originally, how did the wedding work? They did the Kedushin Friday afternoon, and they did the Chuppah Motzai Shabbos. Later, it was moved together, that you did the Kedushin and the Chuppah Friday afternoon. Why was it done Friday afternoon? Because people, Nachum Lam, Baruch Hashem, has never lacked for a meal, I can testify, as good parents, and I yet knew his grandparents, never lacked for a meal. But we have money. None of us are poor. Just think how wealthy we are. Food, things that we take for granted. There's so many people. Have you ever been to Africa? Have you ever seen the way people live? Did you ever see what life was like under the communist regime? Sure, no one lacked for food under the communists, but all you had every day was bread, potatoes, cabbage, beets, and milk. And eggs. That was the limit of what was available. If you were lucky enough to buy jelly, in the entire communist empire, all you had were 5 billion jars of apple jelly. They had one fruit, that's it, communist fruit, that's the jelly we make this year. But we in the Western world, America, Israel, Canada, oh, what a world we have. We don't lack. But people have to eat Shabbos. You know what it meant for people who were poor to have a Sudat Shabbat, to have a Malava Malka? Ah, so that was Minig Yisrael. So he says, if you can avoid a Chupat Nida, it is most desirable. And then he goes in to a whole description of what marriage is about. And I have to say, it's a description of hormones. This is not a description of holiness and sanctity. It's a description of a man's love, or I'll even use the word lust, for a woman. Something that people should speak about today when they teach Torah. This is normal. This is natural. God have mercy, the world in which we live and what goes on. We sanctify it. Chuppah v'kedushin. But thank God, I don't have to tell you, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Yoima, when they took away sexual lust, what happened to the world? Right or wrong, the world stopped producing. Even the chickens didn't lay eggs. And he goes on, a beautiful description, that how do you make a wedding if you can't consummate it? And he can't end what the wedding is for. And oh, what a beautiful description. That we do what we can, we don't want them to be upset. And he gives a whole description of Nida here. Do you know that the Ethiopians, before they came in Aliyah, can anyone tell me what happened when a woman had her monthly period with the Ethiopian community? She lived in a separate tent. They had a separate tent that was called the Beit Nida, Mashahu Kazah. You have to see the literature on it. And he says, and Ida Galmuda, she's separated. And how can we let them be so sad? How can we let them be so upset? And he says, believe me, if we can, we postpone the wedding. We don't have to be samech on the Rishonim who holds you can have a chupat nidah and there's a kinyan and everything is fine and good. We do what we can. But if we can't, then of course you did the right thing by making the wedding. Fine. If the tshuva would end here, there's nothing to talk about. Fine. Good. And every rav, any one of you who's going to have a kehila, and I guarantee you your father had this shaila many, many times, every rav will have the shaila chupat nida, and you have to handle it, you have to deal with it. And you have to deal with it quietly, and generally it's the mother of the kala that you have to talk with and work it out, because the chupat nidah is not as big a problem as the yichud afterwards. That becomes the real problem. So you see, if he would end the tshuva here, it's nothing to talk about. Fine, good. Then he adds on an unbelievable story. This story has been repeated, has been criticized. This is one of the main attractions that tell you this is an absolute forgery. It's impossible that the great Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, wrote this. Maisa haya beir hazot. Story happened in our city. But pochaz echad shenatan etav bevitel shal adam gadol shayatam shudechet kva li acher. First of all, the story. This story repeats itself in the response to literature time and time again. My dear students, unfortunately, human beings, Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Minu Rav. Unfortunately, particularly the male species. The male species is worse than the female species. You want a proof? You want a simple proof? You just read Parshat Yitro. What does it say in Parshat Yitro? 10 commandments, Lo Titzach, Lo Tinav, Lo Tana Berecha, Eid Sheka. Who's being told this? Jews who just saw Kriya Jamsuf. Jews who had Matan HaSinai. Masherat HaShivcha, what's the Tanchumis say? Masherat HaShivcha, Layam Lo Rai, Yecheskel, Bumbuzbi, Chez Yonot Shalom. Who are you telling this to? Shows you. A human being is a human being. You can have the greatest revelations in the world, and you still got to be told, don't rob, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't give false testimony. The human is a human. So we constantly come up with this. What is it talking about? Pochas. What does pochas mean? Don't use the word in modern Hebrew, but pochas, it means what you would call a wise aleck, a bit of a sinner, a pochas, a bit of a bum, let's say. I don't have to tell you what goes on. In your modern terms, a kid who comes to zoo for the year and he's on drugs occasionally, and I don't have to tell you what goes on, and he's in kikar chatulim, I think it's called, chatulo, whatever, I don't know. Let me not elaborate. And Danny, she was worried that I don't know what goes on, that I'm... They understand. Oh, boy, did that middle-aged lady misjudge an old young man, a old young Rebbe? Wow, did she? I'll deny a Rebbe. Did she misjudge me? You're missing the connection, Baruch, but I can't repeat everything. I sat today with a stylist, and I'm still bleary-eyed, and I have to thank my business, David Pardo. If the book comes out in top form, you got to thank David. Just be aware. Okay, so. So this pochas, what happened? This girl is engaged, the shidduch, very important, the prominent family, and this bum comes along and he sees, gee, this is a nice girl, a pretty girl, he's ready to grab her and run off with her, and at times maybe a woman's heart is swept away, who knows, she was engaged to this well-to-do, fine Torah scholar, maybe not the handsomest guy in the world, and here this member of the mafia, this young bum, is a great-looking guy, and he's a paratrooper, and all that goes with it, and he's reshi. So to sabotage them, to see that the shidduch is not ruined, they make the wedding immediately. And when is immediately? On Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av. A wedding on Tisha B'Av. And he quotes the great rabbi, and they ask this rabbi, quotes the Ramah, you don't know who he means, Reish Mem Hei, Reb Meisha Kohen, whatever, Ramah, we have a Ramah Arishon, does he mean him? And they asked him, do they have to fast? You all know that the Chatan Mekala fast. Okay, don't shoot at me, please, the Soloveitchik heritage. Normative Judaism, a Chatan Mekala fast. What am I talking about, Adam, the Soloveitchik heritage? Ah, Shalavit Meisman's description of her mother, that her father, Rebbe Prujana, told her she has to fast, Rebbe Feinstein, and Rebbe Chaim Briska came to her and said, We in Brisk, you know, the Brisk never fasted outside of Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. They got away with everything. And he said, you don't have to fast, whatever. And she told Reb Chaim, as only Rebbe Sinkeshia Feinstein Soloveitchik could, with all due respects to my future father-in-law, Reb Chaim Briska, mind your own business. My father, Paskin, I have to fast. It's right in the book. It's a famous story. So, Chatna Mikala have to fast. Now, could you imagine? It's Tisha B'Av, and they're asking this imaginary Gadol Rishon, do they have to fast? And the Rishon answers them, absolutely not. Not the Chatan, not the Kala, not the Shushpinim. How would you translate that? The Unterfer is in Yiddish, but I don't know what's the word in English. Help me out. It's more than the best man, the Shushpinim, the ushers. I don't know. It doesn't lend itself. The Unterfer is the best translation I can give you. And 10 people who are close to them are not allowed to fast. And he says, the first day of marriage is the greatest joy in the world. And it's a din d'oraita ki yikach ish isha. And Tisha B'Av is only a din medivrei Kabbalah. It's in Nevi'im already, you know, in Zechariah Hanavi, and I believe it's a Perek Chet, if I'm not mistaken, but you can check it out. But it's only a Medivrei Kabbalah. Do we have to fast? Absolutely not. The Simcha knocks out the fast day on Tisha B'Av. Not even Tainit Chatan V'Kala. Do you realize what he's saying here? And he brings a proof from the Gaon. It's an open Mishnah that the Kohen can't look at a nega on Chol HaMoed. Why not? Because he may have to declare the person Tamei. And if he declares him Tamei, he ruins his Yontif. He has to go Chutz L'Machaneh. So we say the Kohen doesn't look at the nega on Chol HaMoed. No, he's Tamei. What's going on here? Is he, isn't he? No, you delay it. Let him have Simchas Yontif. No fasting. They have to have Simcha. This Tisha B'Av doesn't count. No one is allowed to fast. Not the Chatan, not the Kala. This is a proof to Reb Chaim. There was no concept of a Tainis Chasam V'Kala. It comes along much later. They don't have to fast on Tisha B'Av. The Shushpinim don't have to fast. 10 of the people invited don't have to fast. Boy, I wish I was at that wedding at the next Tisha B'Av. That would be great. Watch Shasa D'Chak. This is coming out of the ghetto. This is too loyalty. And he tells a story. I mean, his mind was so fruitful. It's unbelievable. He tells a story that everyone around him said, but it's still Tisha B'Av, and an elderly gentleman wanted they should still feel it's Tisha B'Av, so in the middle of the wedding, he would give the Chatan V'Kala Musa, talking about Kedushat Hayom, talking about Tisha B'Av, and the rabbi told them, Chas V'Chalila, you have no right to ruin their day, you have no right, Asur L'Hatzivam, you have no right to make them sad. Chalila laharot shum bechivi atzvut biyom hachatuna. You're not allowed to show any sadness on the day of the wedding. And he quotes, I mean, he's quoting this rabbi, he quotes Ezra. If you recall with Ezra, there's the famous description on Rosh Hashanah, how he's rebuking the Jews and they're intermarried. By the way, it's very important to quote Ezra Nehemiah, because all these from Jews that start crying how terrible it is, what's happening in Israel, you know, everything they see with dark glasses. Gentlemen, in Ezra Nehemiah was a lot more terrible at the time of Bayit Sheni. Everyone came back, intermarried. I don't know of one intermarried person in this room. Am I right or wrong, Danny? You come back. Well, Matan has to finish army, then we'll worry about marriage. But I guarantee you he's not intermarried. Yeah, he's going to intermarry ethnically. He's going to bring if Matan listened to the Rebbe, a little seichel. I saw so many Yekis married to Yemenite women, 50, they never looked back. You understand?
They're
beautiful kids. The most beautiful marriage. Forget about the kids. The women, they know how to treat a man. They are so smart. They will straighten you out. They will teach you better. But they'll never make you. They'll let you feel that you're the boss. They are so intelligent, you have no idea. So remember, in the army, keep your eyes open. Only a Dot HaMizrach. That's the way to go. Hey, he's going into the army next. He's got to be proud. But what's going on here in this tshuva, it's beyond words. Beyond words. And he says that, how can you make them stare? How can you get them upset? Even Ezra called off his Musa, called off, and there was intermarriage. There was Chilul Kol HaKodesh. But not on Rosh Hashanah. Kodesh Hayom. That's what he said. And certainly, Kodesh Hayom, even though it's Tisha B'Av, forget about Tisha B'Av. The marriage counts. Not only that, he says, Dai, you do one thing. What do you do? Eifa Makra. That's all you have to do. And that was the custom, of course, which I rarely see in Israel. We did it at my wedding. We did it in Chutz Laretz. I rarely see it in Israel, that they take sawdust, sprinkle it on your head, Zeich LeMikdash. When my grandson got married just now, they taka gave me dust that they picked up at the Kotel. So I mentioned in my Divrei Torah that I said under the chuppah that what a schut it is that my Rebbe took sawdust from cigarette, they burned the cigarette and took a little, the ashes. And here I have ashes from the Kotel HaMaravi. What a difference. But that's what he says. That's all you're allowed to do.
We
break a glass here. He doesn't mention breaking a glass, by the way. So it could be they didn't have that minute yet. And he only mentions taking the what word did I use? Not the sawdust, but what was the word I used? The ashes. That's the more correct word. And he says, this is the way we have to treat them. And he says, you'll say to me, so why were you so upset with the chupat nida? Why there did you say, try your best not to do a chupat nida, so they should be happy if it's an open gemara? So he quotes the gemara. That's when there's a question of a meal involved and there's great chisarin kesev. But here where there's no chisarin kesev, I would delay it till the chatan v'kala can be happy together and complete the marriage. And certainly on Tisha B'Av, chas v'chalila, that you should say they did something wrong. Avo vaday she'en ra'uy klal la'asot hayom ha'kodesh hazeh, referring to the marriage. B'tuma u'b'yetzev gadol. Umagunuchu ma'od, v'ani tzarich la'arich ol b'rayot l'chagzeit d'varai. But nevertheless, he says, v'eini, I don't have to bring any more rayot, because you understand me well. Ki anshei mofet atem, you are talmidei chachamim, and people like you will understand me very well. And we should nira b'simchatchem, ne'amana habatchem, and he signs it, Asha Baharav Reb Yechiel. Gentlemen, there is no tshuva that has caused more storm than this. It is literally a precursor to the reform movement abolishing Tisha B'Av. And the genius of the Besamim Rosh, how he threw the curveball in when you start to see beneath the surface. And here I'm not reading anything into the tshuva. That last tshuva you saw, the Kasa de Chasna, you saw his commentary where he talks about shaving and enlightenment in Italy and Germany. That is the Besamim Rosh Megale Tefach. You can say that many times it's machaset fachayim, but there he's magala tefach. He is opening up. And here, this is opening up 100%. He's telling you what he thinks of Tisha B'Av. He is a German.
Is
he
there
is. Call it what you wish, but it's a precursor to what the reform movement later does.
Because he didn't deny God, he denied Torah, he denied you giving Torah.
Yeah, but he's denying Shivat Zion. It's a serious matter. We'll put it that way. Yes, Nachum. Right.
And they rank Tisha B'Av right up there with Moshe's Yahrzeit. Like they say, some people fast on this and some people. So he's writing in the 1700s, but is it possible that much earlier it was considered minhag?
No. The halacha is quite clear. I mean, even from the Gemara, you see Tisha B'Av has a status of its own. And certainly in the Shulchan Aruch, how can you, he's writing already 200-300 years after the Shulchan Aruch. Of course, it goes without saying. Even the Brisker, as much as they could abolish fast days, they couldn't get rid of Tisha B'Av. You understand? Even the Brisker.
I was invited to a wedding in Asolo.
Yeah, we are a member.
Right.
Okay, the same. But the rabbinate did the wedding, right or wrong?
No, a reform rabbi did.
Reform rabbi. So what's the chiddush? I thought you're telling me the rabbinate. I couldn't understand how the rabbinate does the wedding in a Asara B'Tavis. Unless they hold. You know, there's a machlekes between the Rav and Rav Moshe on the start of the 3 weeks. For the sake of argument, can you do a wedding, Motzoi Shiva Sabbatamas? It was Erev Shiva Sabbatamas. Excuse me, not Masai. Erev, correct. The start of the 3 weeks. Like if Shiva Sabbatamas falls on a Thursday, so Wednesday night, can you do a wedding? So Reb Moshe held yes. There's an open shiv in the Yigrat Moshe. The Rav held absolutely not. That at night it's only a chetta to eat. In other words, he brings a proof from the Yerushalmi that if when you go to sleep, you have to make it tonight, that if you wake up in the middle of the night, you have to be able to eat and drink. From that you see that Tainet is really chal when you finish supper. With Mariv, by the time you go to sleep, unless you make a tonight, the Tainet is chal. So the Rav held you're not allowed. But Rav Moshe held that night, the 3 weeks don't begin yet, the 3 weeks only begin with daybreak when the actual fast begins. That's the Machlekes Achrayim. Halacha L'maisa, in Israel, I'm curious how they paskin. I've never yet seen the shaila come up, but to do a wedding in Asara B'Tavis, although technically speaking, there's no Easter of doing a wedding in Asara B'Tavis, right or wrong. The Easter is only either the 3 weeks, the 9 days, etc. The Sfadim hold the 9 days, Ashkenazim 3 weeks, but it's certainly not within the spirit. But one thing is for sure, Tisha B'Av, the reformers, the innovators, had tremendous problem with Tisha B'Av, because here you are b'fnei Am V'Eta, in front of all your Gentile friends, in front of the New York Times, you're mourning for a country that is not America, not Germany, not France, etc. You're mourning for Jerusalem, that's not Berlin, that's not Paris, that's not New York. You're mourning with a feeling of dual loyalty. And every Jew coming out of the ghetto who was challenged by the general world felt this dichotomy. And I don't have to tell you, here you have Reb Shaul Berlin, black and white. And it's ingenious how he begins with a shaila about an either and chupat neither, and that you don't upset the day, and it's better to postpone the wedding, not to worry about the money they spent on as the Gemara says in Ketuvah, on a tabach, on a caterer, and chas v'chalili you should ruin their joy, their happiness, their dancing. He says, all right, b'diyeved you can be samach that chupat neither is kona, but lachetla we shouldn't try to do it. And then he goes into the digression on Tisha B'Av with the whole story, with the Ramah, with asking the Shaila, and what he passed for Halacha, and you can understand why this Shubha was so attacked and castigated. Because here, you don't need rakefet to read into it. It stares at you, black and white. So one second, let me reiterate. Before we get, I want to show you something amazing and tell you of my great displeasure by what has happened at Yeshiva College. And maybe you're going back, Adam, to Yeshiva College. Maybe you'll help change it. But first, what we do today. First of all, the Rebbe was happy to admit in a sentence he said many months ago in an introductory lecture, I was totally wrong, and I confused Reb Shlomo Friedland and the Reziner, the Sidrei Tarot, and the false Yerushalmi Kodshim, and I thank my Talmud, Rabbi Yisrael Herzog, for calling it to my attention, and I gave you some sources. If anyone's interested, I can give you the whole folder, and you might want to do a paper on it one day. It's a fascinating topic. And as Nachum said, the Rashi and the Rebbe in subsequent editions did make clear it was not an original Gemara, but rather his commentary. I also want to tell you that in relation to Rajin, and what I said is very true, that it's had a resuscitation in modern times. Ishbitza and the Rajiner and the dynasty and their writings and the Meshi Loach, I see a lot of youth finding comfort and succor and guidance in that dynasty. It's small in numbers, but it has had quite an impact in modern times, at least in the greater YU circles that I find myself in. Anyway, then we went into the Sum of Rosh, and we saw that when it comes to shaving Chol HaMoed, that was so ingenious on his part. The guy who took a haircut beat the hell out of him. He's a sheikh, it's a nice spot. But the shaving Chol HaMoed, that's not like a haircut. That you do every day, twice a week. You shave Erev Yontif, 100% permitted to shave in Chol HaMoed. Once again, he comes back to Rabbeinu Tam, and most revealing the Kasa Dahasana when he explains why shaving is so important when you step out into the Western world. Then we went into the Mara and the Dalit Kosot and the Colin Stullen publication and the Mayan. So you see, this is a little Besamim Rosh. Look how it's quoted, re-quoted, and when it's quoted in Colin Stullen, it's quoted with full Derech Eretz, that this is legitimate. No one questions who he is. And Mayan calls them to order. The high point of the class, of course, was Tisha B'Av. And that's an amazing forgery, an amazing tshuva, how he begins with such an innocent sheila. But already with Chupat Nida, you see the attitude he takes. Postpone the wedding, the joy of the Chatan V'Kala. He is a sexologist, to use modern terminology, okay? Put it that way. He knows what he's saying. Baruch Hashem. He's a sexologist, period. But then when he goes into Tisha B'Av, totally destroying the concept of Tisha B'Av, Churban HaBayit. No one has to fast. Katan, Kala, the Shishbinim, I imagine their parents, their 10 closest friends. What are they? And Chas V'Chalila, to give them Musa. The most he will allow is Eifah Makla. And you can see why he was so vociferously criticized, because he comes out, a reformed Jew, as Kirby said. He's an apikoros. It's not so simple.
Okay.
Simple to use that word either. Okay. Yeah, Rabbi Reuben says it's not so. We'll let the machleket continue. I want to just tell you, next week you're going to see something unbelievable, and I'll give you a background. You need a bit of a background in Torah history here, but next week you're going to see something unbelievable. How he knew to come up with every nuance of every problem of Torah versus modernity. Tomorrow. I'm dealing with Yeshivat Chovevei Torah. It's a very important lecture. And from there I'm sailing into the swing to the right. And from there I'm sailing into Rakefet, and why he should have every reason to be furious with the right wing. I will show you evidence in class right in front of your eyes. And nevertheless, I want to reach a conclusion of Torah Hashem Tamima. The next few lectures should really cost 99 grand a piece, but because I'm going to make a fool out of myself, it's chinam ein kesef. Now, I just want to show you something. You guys from YU, this is terrible. If not for the matmer, how would I know who my classmates are? Friday night, I meet a guy coming. By the way, at the Kotel was the largest crowd I've ever seen Friday night in 42 years of governing at the Kotel. Of course you can find me. There are 20,000 people there. You saw, we were right in back, but we davened right in back. Again, all the American wise guys, beyond the army and back. The guys who know it all. If only we davened at Armenian, it would be a different country. We were right in back, but we leave. We have long walks. We daven bizman. 18 minutes after Shki, we say Baruch Hu, and we leave. But I was right there. But the crowd, did you see all the way back to Shah Ashpat? It was like, if it was like Shavuot morning. And it was mainly Jews. There were very few Goyim there. There were birthright groups from France, from America, from birthright, regular. Ashrei Ayin Ratazot. And don't let anyone speak negatively of Israel. So they tell me. So I meet a guy going home. He says, I recognize him as my classmate. I looked him up. I got his name clearly. Okay. Without a yearbook. And David tells me, there are no more yearbooks in YU. There's no matter that I want to show you. You guys are sinners. Here, this is one of my grandson's units in the army. Take a look at a yearbook that they put out. I want to see Matan. I want to see, look at this. Everyone here, this is my name, right here. Look at this beautiful job. And they're in the army, and they have time to put it out. And don't tell me that the YU guys are learning all day. I just, Shabbos, I was at a Sudash Lishita memorial for a classmate of mine. So there's a big professor there who just got back from a sabbatical. He was at YU part of the time. He tells me he's in the Beis Medrash learning, and suddenly they bring in outside the new Beis Medrash. You have a hallway, tremendous screens that everyone runs out. It was some big football game. The Saints play. Who were they playing? The Saints. And everyone stops learning, and when cooked on the football game, and this is why you, and that they have time for, and one Rebbe went crazy the next day, Rabbi Yitzchak Kohn gave Misram told, and said, they ain't saints, and you ain't saints, and he let them have it, if you're going back to YU, you have one task, to get rid of all the drugs there and to see that they have a matmid yearbook. Now, the freebies. This is for Yitz, Rav Asher Weiss. No one like him. He's just fabulous. Aruch HaTorah. This is from Rabbi Mazoz's yeshiva. It has in here Shailot HaLachal HaMaisa. Very fascinating. Svadik Chachamim, but the answers are great. Anyone who wants the Rav's Torah on Birchat HaMazon, yours for the asking. And anyone who wants to do... Anyone who wants to do research on the Tzitzit, these are the sources. And anyone who wants the sources on the Gemara, the Friedlander, and the... here it all is... staring right at you. Here, take it all. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.